God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke and said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Okay. Well, there's that, right? I guess some of us expected it. I didn't know. I was afraid to make a prediction on this just because the Democrat Party is so utterly corrupt. That nothing matters. No rules in terms of Biden getting these delegates. I guess he can step down. They can change anything they want to because they're not tied to any form of actual truth, just mood. But Fox News knows better than this. This is the headline. Less than 24 hours after Biden exits race, Kamala Harris racks in stunning fundraising haul. No, it's not stunning. No, this was set up in advance, and it's been discussed for weeks. If they dump the figureheads and the figurehead endorses Kamala Harris, the big donors had to be there to step up, to pour money into it. So look at the momentum. There's a fever for Kamala Harris. Everybody's on the Kamala train. She's the most popular woman in America. It's a lie. Kamala Harris couldn't pull together a presidential race that got her above the 2-3% point. The fact is this. I believe, well, not the fact, but I believe God is showing us once again, it's all on paper. It's all on paper. The one true leader that you can count on is me, God Almighty. I think that's what God's showing us. Seems evident to me. Something that's less evident is, did the figurehead decide to do this? I say that with full intentionality. We saw a release from the figurehead. Well, we were told it was from the figurehead, that he was stepping out of the race. Well, we were told it came from Joe Biden, but we were told that by the same people who told us that Joe Biden had no cognitive decline. That Joe Biden has never been involved in his son's business dealings. That Joe Biden never got on a phone call or an email with his son's business partners. That the so-called vaccines were safe and effective. The election was the safest, most secure election in history. Donald Trump was a Russian plant. So we were told this by the same people who issued these lies. Does that mean that we have to believe Joe Biden stepped out of the race? I know when this happened this past weekend, that was one of my first questions is, wait, who says? A piece of paper on Twitter. Now, the news coverage of this is, of course, going to be breathless and the Mockingbird media because it's money. Because this will be an opportunity to drive tune in. There's a lot more that I'm paying attention to, and it's not necessarily just the fact that the figurehead, we're told, has stepped aside or has chosen to. I'm still looking at, and I'm not going to stop looking at, the timing here. All the attempts to destroy Donald Trump have utterly failed. The corrupt judge in New York, this case will almost certainly be tossed out because there was no unanimous verdict, because the corrupt judge set up a system where the jury didn't even have to agree on the crime. It takes a very basic understanding of jurisprudence to understand Donald Trump was not convicted of any crime. He was convicted of three. Four members voting for a separate crime. 4-4-4, there's your 12. Supreme Court has said, no, criminal cases don't work that way. We've got the case in Mar-a-Lago now thrown out, though the government's appealing, because the prosecutor was unconstitutionally provisioned. And that's cut and dried. Congress did not fund that position and did not create a law to have that position. Therefore, that position does not exist, and Jack Smith is out. We could always count on the Supreme Court-ish. Well, not really. John Roberts is, in my mind, compromised. Some good rulings now and then, and maybe more often now than not. But I'm looking at the timing. after these things have failed and President Trump is still going to be the Republican nominee, we had the perfect situation to allow an assassination attempt against President Trump. Everything a potential assassin would need was set up. The ability to walk around with a rangefinder, a device that shooters use to figure out how far away a target is. To be there an hour ahead and be reported as a suspicious individual, but not be stopped, detained. A principal, in this case, President Trump, getting on stage, though 20 minutes prior to that, they knew this guy was a shooter. Then being allowed to fire off the shots, and 26 seconds goes by before he is taken out. And now hindsight, as you look at this, almost certainly the Secret Service snipers, counter-snipers, had eyes on him. But were they Secret Service? Now we understand that the Department of Homeland Security had bumped down the number of people as guarding Trump in comparison to Biden. I think it was 4 to 12. They had also put in place inexperienced agents, people who'd never didn't build that experience, made forever visually stunning in a way by watching a female agent struggle with her firearm. That's not something you want someone guarding a president of the United States. Just this reminder from Mike Davis. The Biden administration beefed up Secret Service protection for President Zelensky. And they denied beefed up Secret Service protection for President Trump. Even as the Democrat Party was building a narrative that Trump was a 36-time felon, a criminal entering the White House, a rapist, a convicted rapist. Of course, he was not convicted of rape. That was not what happened in that trial, Jean E. Carroll. And the Jean E. Carroll trial is as unbelievable as any trial in history, as unbelievable in terms of a conviction as any trial in history. And here's President Trump. The day before he is the official nominee, there is an open attempt to kill him that looks to me to be openly welcomed by the people who run Joe Biden. So now we've got Biden, we're told, decided to step down. Now, truly, truly dark in all of this, and I mean dark, is this idea I had expressed to my wife over the weekend. That if Biden is going to continue to, we're supposed to continue to pretend he's leading the country. If Biden is going to be uncontrollable, giving speeches or speaking to the media and going off script, I didn't really agree to step down. He could say something like that. Now, this is truly dark. I'm hoping it doesn't happen. But we were told the figurehead had COVID. And this is truly dark. I'm truly hoping it doesn't happen. But this is the way it's done in the Soviets. If he's not going to play ball and act like he stepped down or forget that he stepped down, that COVID might get really bad. And he might die. A hero. Having served his country selflessly. Never having gotten a dime for himself, of course. I'm praying that doesn't happen because I pray Joe Biden has time to repent for all the evil he's allowed to be done through him. Now, as this was all going on, of course, the name Hillary Rodham Clinton kept trending in social media as if Hillary would come along and save the Democrat Party from itself. So with that, let's look back at Hillary. And let's look back at that time when she was the great, great hope for America.
In 2010, the earthquake of Haiti, not only American taxpayers, but the whole world has given billions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation for the Haitians. Not even 2% of that money went back to Haiti. So, Mr. Trump, we are asking you, begging you, the Haitian community will side with you if one day you ask Hillary Clinton publicly to disclose the audit of all the money they have stolen from Haiti in 2010 after the earthquake.
It's a Haitian reporter talking to President Trump. Now, at that time, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and Haiti had that one of its many disasters, one of the things she leapt right on was working with FOBS. What does that mean? Friend of Bill. We know this through emails. To establish a Wi-Fi network on the island of Haiti. a big one. And FOBS, Friends of Bill, they got involved in the bidding, except there was really no bidding. They just got a ton of money to go in and build a Wi-Fi network on an island where the primary concern of people was not being eaten by cannibals. No, the cannibal gangs that tend to roam Haiti when things like this happen. Truly, truly an island for which we should pray. So just remembering that the Democrats had again floated the name Hillary Clinton. Now, she has since endorsed Kamala Harris, but how fascinating that they floated the name of this woman. This is some audio that's been rarely heard. This is the great lady herself, Hillary Rodham Clinton, talking about, well, stealing an election.
I think we should have pushed for an election in the Palestinian territories. I think that was a big mistake. And if we were going to push for an election, then we should have made sure that we did something to determine who was going to win.
We should have done something to determine who's going to win, Hillary Rodham Clinton said about the election in Afghanistan. We should have pushed for it. She felt it was a mistake, but we should have determined the winner. In other words, not a real election. But they'd never do that here. In Psalm chapter 37, verses 13 through 22, we read, "But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend the bow, bring down the poor and the needy, to slay those whose ways are upright, but their swords will pierce their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. Better the little that the righteous have than the wealth of the many wicked. For the power of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The blameless spend their days under the Lord's care, and their inheritance will endure forever. In times of disaster, they will not wither. In days of famine, they will enjoy plenty, but the wicked will perish. Though the Lord's enemies are like the flowers of the field, they will be consumed. They will go up in smoke. The wicked will borrow and do not repay, but the righteous give generously. Those the Lord blessed will inherit the land, but those he cursed will be destroyed." It doesn't give me comfort to think of people being destroyed, but it gives me a sense, a reminder, that God is justice, which makes it so tragic that with God, I think having saved President Trump, the Republican National Committee decided to turn their backs on God. Now, people can practice their only religion. That's fine. But I don't think we need, well, to be frank, foreign gods in the Republican National Convention's prayers. This is Hamid Dhillon, a patriot, and also a Sikh.
Tum hi jaani Nanak Das sada qurbani.
Dear Waheguru, our one true God, we thank you for creating America as a unique haven on this earth where all people are free to worship according to their faith. We seek your blessings and guidance for our beloved country. Please bless our people with wisdom as they vote in the upcoming election, and please bless with humility, honesty, skill, and integrity all those who conduct the election. Finally, we thank you for the Chardi Kala spirit that we have witnessed in President Trump. That is, the tireless and uplifting spirit that is sustained even in the face of violent adversity, like a founding father centuries ago. And we thank you, dear God, for protecting his life.
The one true God, being the Sikh God. Hamid K. Dhillon is, as I say, free to practice her faith, to believe as she wishes. And I would just say this to the Republican National Committee. You're going to lose, well, everything. You're doing exactly what Israel did, the people of Israel, which caused the Lord to turn his back on them. I understand your big tent approach in terms of winning the things of this world. I understand it. You're also trying to head off at the pass the idea that you're trying to establish Christian nationalism. And you are, in fact, cutting off your own nose, despite your face. A wound that will last forever, unless you repent. We'll come back on The Disciples' View. I'm Todd Herman. The party of hatred. I mean, that's really how I view the Democrat Party. Republican Party is not a perfect party. I'm not a Republican. I've said many, many times, I'm a Christian constitutional. I'm a Christian constitutional conservative populist. I know that's a mouthful. But I do view the Democrat Party as the party of hate because they're the party that stands so firmly against God. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Where did this all begin? Well, it's a long story, and you can go way back in the history of the Democrat Party and what they've become. But you can also go to one, I think, inflection point in American history, and it's a recent history. It's described as one big blank mistake America, Obama. I know it's easy to bag on Barack Obama and to take a segment and turn it into something about Barack Obama, but what I want to turn it into instead is the disciples he has made. Now, we all make disciples of something, all of us. Anybody who has any influence over anyone else is making a disciple. So you might be making disciples of, let's say, professional baseball. Perhaps you and your family travel to games, and these are your weekends and sometimes whole weeks at spring training to watch your heroes play the game. That's great family activity. Hanging out together, having a common pursuit you enjoy, tracking the teams together, collecting cards together, and you are making disciples of baseball. People who are going to go out and evangelize the purity of the game, the beauty of the game. You're making disciples. If you in your home talk politics all the time, and this dominates your thoughts and your kids are observing this, you are making disciples of politics. I did this. When I was doing, well, I'm doing national radio now, but when I was on Rush Limbaugh's program, before I devoted myself to putting God at the center of my work, I was making disciples of politics. Some people make disciples of other people. Sometimes if your job is to support a very charismatic CEO or state senator or federal senator or presidential candidate, your job is to make disciples of them. Now, of course, this stands firmly against our command from the Lord Jesus to go and make disciples of him. He's the only one worth being a disciple of. But Barack Hussein Obama made disciples. He himself was a disciple of Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky is, if you read his book, his first printing of Rules for Radicals, he was a disciple of Satan. He said it in the dedication of his book. Dedicated to Lucifer, a community organizer so good he got his own planet. That wasn't a mistake. Everything Saul Alinsky taught stands against God. God is a God of order and compassion, not chaos and hatred. Saul Alinsky's entire political paradigm was about causing people to hate their opponent politically, to try to destroy their opponent. One of the things that Saul Alinsky never discussed is what do you do after you destroy your opponent? What do you build? Well, Satan cannot build. He can only tear down. So Barack Obama wields massive power behind the scenes at the Democrat Party. He and Michelle and Susan Rice, that entire group of people who I contend are actually running things. So Kamala Harris will need Barack Obama's blessing to get anything done. Obama still controls many of the big donors. So let's look at the disciples of Barack Hussein Obama, who occasionally tells the truth, though sometimes he doesn't mean to tell that truth.
So to all the young people out there, as well as those of you who consider yourselves young at heart, I want you to stay angry. I want you to stay frustrated.
Let's hear that one more time. Barack Obama telling the truth about what he wants from young people.
So to all the young people out there, as well as those of you who consider yourselves young at heart, I want you to stay angry.
This is guy named,
I want you to stay frustrated.
Pardon me, Mr. Obama. This is Sim Gill. posted this on Twitter. What people already know, truly a dead body's more competent than Trump to be president. It would do exponentially less harm to our democratic republic and honor our ideals more. So who is Sim Gill? Apparently he's a Salt Lake County, Utah district attorney. Huh. In the conservative state of Utah. A disciple of Barack Obama. Well, emotional disciple. Hate the person you're running against. This is a Tennessee city councilwoman. Her name is Ginny Welsh. There was a resolution in that council that was just simply going to condemn the assassination attempt against President Trump. This is, again, in Tennessee.
It touched Mr. Trump because Mr. Trump has been calling for this and that people heeded his call.
Hear that again? It's brief, but it's clear.
It touched Mr. Trump because Mr. Trump has been calling for this and that people heeded his call.
So she contends that Mr. Trump had been calling for political assassinations. He has? I would think that would be very easy video to post where President Trump is calling for this. In point of fact, Barack Hussein Obama has made disciples of people who are willing to say things like that. While he was in the White House, Barack Hussein Obama gave an interview. And in that interview, he discussed how good he is at killing people. He said, "It turns out I'm good at it." He, in talking about that, was mentioning putting drones up to take out American citizens. That's murder. Now, granted, they were overseas and working with terrorist group, and so they put themselves up for that. It's murky. But you're not supposed to do that without a warrant. So when Barack Hussein Obama was in office, and prior to going into office, off of the backs of the teachings of Saul Alinsky, off of his words and his techniques, pick a target, isolate it, cut it off from the support base, he began building disciples. This is Savannah Hernandez. And she is out filming people's responses to the assassination attempt against President Trump. And she gets confronted by a young person who is a disciple of the Alinsky method. Hate your opponent.
I was watching interviews from what happened in Pennsylvania a couple days ago, and I saw an interview with an ER doctor who was trying to render aid to the man who was unalived during the rally. And I could not get over this fact that there was an ER doctor wearing a MAGA hat and a Trump shirt.
I'm sorry, wrong audio clip. Let me explain what that was. That's a woman named Jess who lost her race for a Missouri House seat. And hear that again, because I did the intro the wrong way. Hear this again. This is a woman who lost her race to be a Missouri State House representative. And she's disturbed that a doctor, an ER doc, was there to render aid to a man who she says became unalive. In other words, murdered.
I was watching interviews from what happened in Pennsylvania a couple days ago, and I saw an interview with an ER doctor who was trying to render aid to the man who was unalived during the rally. And I could not get over this fact that there was an ER doctor wearing a MAGA hat and a Trump shirt. This is a guy working in any ER across the country that we would need to trust our daughters and granddaughters to if they were harmed. Someone who would need to give aid to someone who is gay, an immigrant, someone who is trans. And I was mortified thinking about that. Horrified. This guy's not just, you know, your run-of-the-mill Republican. He's a rabid Trump supporter. MAGA hat.
And therefore incapable of caring for another human being. Barack Obama is the man who brought this technique to the forefront of Democrat politics. He's the guy who taught the Alinsky method. Now, Hillary Rodham Clinton wrote love letters to Saul Alinsky. She got to meet with the great man himself. This is why I can, in all honesty, describe the Democrat Party as a party of hate. because they are a party that stands against God in every manner, which is why it's so utterly disturbing and sad that this is the year that the Republican National Committee decided to drop the biblical definition of marriage from the Republican platform. This is the year that they decided to have prayers from Muslims and Sikhs saying that the Sikh God is the one and only true God. The same year that the party of hate is finally getting trampled, the Republican Party decides to sell the actual one true God, the Christian God, down the river. Historically illiterate in terms of what God does to countries that do this to him. And this days after the Lord obviously saved President Trump from that bullet. It is breathtaking. Now, this is Savannah Hernandez. She was out filming people, getting people's responses. And this is a disciple of Alinsky, probably through Barack Obama, and the response that she received.
Okay, guys, so I'm here with a Biden supporter. He's wearing a face mask.
I'm not a Biden supporter.
Because he's very sick, but he keeps taking the mask down to play his flute, which has been incredible. So he's gonna spread COVID while also trying to stop COVID-19 by wearing a face mask. Sir, if you are sick and have COVID-19, then why are you standing here in this crowd putting everybody at risk? Shame on you. If you are wearing a face mask, it is clear that you are sick and you should not be here. You're now calling me a Nazi and a fascist right now, even though you're the one that's screaming at me. Oh.
And he comes after her. Now, with all due respect to Savannah Hernandez, who does great work, she set herself up for this. She knows this. She knows what she's doing, and it's good video. But yes, this is a guy driven insane, wearing a mask clearly so his face isn't shown, taking it down to blow a flute, not to play it, but to blow at it, to make an annoying sound, to disrupt the filming, calling everyone around him Nazis and fascists. The seed of hatred sown into the Democrat Party by Barack Hussein Obama continues to bear fruit. Poison fruit. This is the president of the Redlands Police Officer Commission, and he was unhappy. The city of Redlands city council members allowed a violent anti-police children's book at local events. This also the result of the discipling by Barack Obama by way of Saul Alinsky, by way of Lucifer.
This event provided this image that I hold now as coloring material for children. As you can see, that this is an image of a burning police car with a phrase that police officers are not welcome. This event was attended by elected and city officials sitting in this room right now. It was also promoted by the same individuals and even this specific image endorsed on social media postings. In one of the photos, a child as young as 3 years old can be seen sitting in front of this material. I represent every corporal, officer, detective, and sergeant in the police department, and to say we're disappointed and disgusted is an understatement. I find it extremely disrespectful that individuals would smile at me, shake my hand, come to ask for the support of the RPOA, ask for our money, and then support this type of garbage behind our back. I'll give the benefit of the doubt that maybe you didn't know that this material was at this event, but my expectation is that once you saw it, you addressed it with those individuals, told them it wasn't appropriate and should not be allowed, and that you should disassociate yourself from those people and those organizations in the future.
We're all making disciples of something. Saul Alinsky was discipled, I think, by Lucifer. The evidence is in his book. The first printing of Rules for Radicals dedicates it to Lucifer, a community organizer so good he got his own planet. His techniques, causing hatred and division with no plan to build, are Luciferian. He made a disciple of Barack Hussein Obama and another of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Obama openly sowed hatred into the American political body. Racial hatred, class hatred, he installed it in the most modern sense. And his disciples are everywhere in the Democrat Party. He also, though, was the master of openly lying, just lying to your face. As in his other disciples, people like Alejandro Mayorkas and the people who run the Secret Service and the Department of Homeland Security.
I have very reliable sources telling me that there have been repeated requests for stronger Secret Service protection for President Trump denied by Secretary Mayorkas. Your department has already pushed back on that, calling that absolutely false, but he is putting this on you. Can you respond to that, please?
Well, that is, yeah, that's a baseless and irresponsible statement, and is one that is unequivocally false.
He's a liar. They have now admitted this. This Secret Service has now admitted this. That the team that was guarding Trump was inexperienced. The New York Post has this story that for the past 2 years, they have denied Trump additional security. President Trump had paid for some of his own security to fill in the gap. Barack Obama made disciples of hatred, of gender confusion, of racial division, of economic division, and those disciples are now running the Democrat Party. Especially now, in the apparent stead of even a figurehead president. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. Coming up, I have a question for you about the traits with which God's gifted you that you find most helpful, that you think are the most essential for you in this world to succeed, to thrive, to carry on with what you do. So we give that some thought. The two traits with which God personally blessed you, you find most useful and helpful in this world. We'll get to the Tower of Babel in a second. A couple things just prior to that, prelude, you might say. This is the way to handle leftists on Twitter. This is from J.D. Vance. In fact, he retweeted a story, a hit piece, the Washington Post put out on him. But listen to the hit piece. Ready for this?
Leaked memo shows J.D. Vance's anti-woke ideology on foreign affairs. Trump's VP pick froze dozens of ambassador nominations over issues like gender transition care and diversity hiring, offering a glimpse into his anti-establishment views.
Literally evil. He's not orange, but he's with Orange Hitler. It's a campaign announcement. This is exactly what many, many Republicans and conservatives are seeking. And in fact, it is what has driven people from Hollywood over to the Republicans because they've watched what woke has done. But that's how they think they put out a hit piece on J.D. Vance. And J.D. Vance retweeted it and just wrote, "They got me." That's a great way to handle this, particularly in a town that Mayor Pete, in a long, long interview, Mayor Pete described Mayor Pete. He didn't mean to describe Mayor Pete, but he did describe Mayor Pete. And I wonder if Mayor Pete, our so-called Secretary of Transportation, I wonder if he's on the short list to be vice president to Kamala Harris.
I know a lot of guys like J.D. Vance. I found a lot of people like him who would say whatever they needed to get ahead.
Mayor Pete not only says whatever he needs to get ahead, he does whatever he needs to, including, and I cannot get over actions like this where the media involves himself and only gets caught because someone had a cell phone. Here's what happened is someone in Mayor Pete's office in the comm staff sent notes to the media saying Mayor Pete's going to ride his bike into work for the first day. He's going to be the first federal transportation head to ride a bicycle to work. So here's how this happened. Is apparently Mayor Pete lives in Maryland, and his motorcade drove him across the bridge from the Maryland side into the D.C. side, drove him through the dangerous neighborhood where all the shootings occur, got him within sight of the Capitol where there are cops guarding him, and then he got out of his van, got onto his bicycle, and put on his helmet and pedaled the rest of the way to work, which was about 5 blocks. But yes, Mayor Pete rode his bicycle to work. So J.D. Vance, he says, will say anything to get power, whereas Mayor Pete will only involve himself in street theater like this. And there was national media there filming him riding his bicycle. It happens that I don't think they knew there were other people there filming this setup. And the media didn't say, by the way, it's not a real bike ride. No, they were just promoting Mayor Pete, with whom they're obsessed. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like Mayor Pete on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called The Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
3 sound bites in the Tower of Babbling. Almost always 3. I think we might have one later this week with 2 in an image. The image was just too good for me to not share with you. This is dedicated to a woman named Cammie. Cammie Harris is a woman who was a proud Indian American. She was proud of her heritage as an Indian American. She liked to talk about her heritage as an Indian American. And then one day she said, I'm a proud black woman. And just like they did with Mayor Pete and the fake bicycle ride, the Mockingbird media said, yes, you've always been a proud African American woman. So, Cammie Harris, let's not forget the last time Cammie ran for office as president.
She put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
That was Tulsi Gabbard dismantling Cammie Harris as Cammie sat there shaking her head slightly and not cackling. And that was a victory for Cammie to not cackle. So this was the last Democratic debate in which Cammie participated. And you remember when she called Joe Biden a racist. Remember that? Now, of course, that's gone away because when she was asked about that, you called him a racist. And she said, it was a debate. Right. But do you think he's a racist? It was a debate. That technique of laughing in people's faces is disarming. It could be dealt with a little bit better by reporters saying, hey, just pardon me. Why are you laughing? Why are you doing that? Just why? Explain it. So here she is during that last debate she got to be in.
And Kamala Harris is just that woman that he couldn't even get to look at her. She's beautiful. Yeah. She's brilliant. Yeah. She's a She's stronger than him. She's tougher than him. She's smarter than him. And she's just the kind of woman that would never turn her head and even know who he was as sort of a C-level reality TV figure.
So that was actually Nicole Wallace describing Cammie Harris. You heard Cammie laughing in the background. MSNBC's Nicole Wallace. She would never even acknowledge Donald Trump, who went on to win compared to Cammie's, what, 3%? And by the way, on the last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling dedicated to Cammie Harris, there's a story that Cammie tells in this short video that never happened. There's a bothersome detail to it.
And then my mother would tell a funny story about how, like, one day she, and I was fussing, and you know, and so I'm fussing and fussing. It's much cuter when she would tell the story, but she'd say, so then she would look down at me and, Kamala, what do you want? What do you want? And I looked back up at her and I said, freedom!
uh, So charming that she stole that from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So she stole it from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. That was his story, not hers. Her story never happened. That's Kamala Harris. Oh, by the way, Kamala Harris has also begun using pronouns, but she doesn't get it yet. She introduced herself in a meeting saying, "I'm Kamala Harris. My pronouns are he or are she hers, and I'm a woman wearing a blue dress." No, you're not a woman. No, Kamala. If you're playing the pronoun game, you are a cervix haver or a birthing person, not a woman. That's why you use pronouns. Oh, honestly, just one more thing. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary decided to shut down comments on a tweet they put out and then deleted the entire tweet. So what was so controversial? Merriam-Webster tweeted the following. "What's the word-grammar hill you are absolutely willing to die on? Or you're absolutely dying on?" Well, mine might be not ending a sentence with a preposition. So I might have phrased that. "What's the word-grammar hill on which you will absolutely die?" The reason they shut down the replies first was because they were getting what's called ratioed. Billions of replies, well, not billions, hundreds of thousands, millions of replies of people saying, "Oh, I'm dying on the hill where a man is a man and a woman is a woman." And those responses continued to pile up until it got so embarrassing for Merriam-Webster, they actually deleted the Twitter post. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time, and I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
Of all the traits that the Lord has given you, and I'm not talking here about spiritual gifts. I know that's controversial. And I'm talking about gifts that he's given you of the human sort. Which have served you best, and which do you think are most important for young people to have? For me, it's hustle and resilience. There are intellectual giftings, the ability to speak well. I don't often enough thank God for these things. And my pastor, Jim, was talking about the difference between pride and being satisfied in what God gave you and grateful for that. Pride really talks about itself a lot, like I'm doing now. When you're satisfied with yourself and the giftings that the Lord gave you, you can be confident in them. You can celebrate them. You can be good at their use. You can celebrate the fact that you know how to use them, in other words, the gifts God gave you, but you're not making them up for yourself. God equipped me with hustle and resilience, and he equipped me with hustle based upon something. It's interesting. I was talking with some friends last night at dinner, and it came up about our motivators. And my wife and I were at dinner with our common friend, Samantha. And Samantha shared that her motivator had been fear. That really surprised me because Samantha is the least fear-driven person I've known. She said, "Yeah, it took me a long time to come over that, but that was it. I was a fearful person that motivated many of my behaviors." I said, "I had fear, but it was fear of poverty. So much of what I did in life was I feared being poor." That's interesting because we were not middle class. We were well lower middle class, particularly in comparison to the kids around whom I grew up. And I remember seeing on my mom's car, on her back bumper, it said, I owe, so off to work I go. I never wanted to be in that position. That just, it seemed like slavery to me. And it's not. You know, you do what you can to supply for your family. And it just put into my heart, I'm terrified of being poor. Now, I did go out and do things that would make one poor, like playing in rock bands and dropping out of college. So at the same time as I had this fear, I also had this confidence in some gifts that God gave me. But it was resilience that really made the difference to me, the ability to get back up. And I went back and thought about, where does resilience come from? In my case, it came from losing a wrestling match and going back out. or it came from lessons on racetracks. Like the first time I got in a horrible crash, an end-over-end crash when I was 15. I was 15 years old, going 130 miles an hour and crashed my car end-over-end seven times and got out. We went home. We were at the national championships, went out, went home. My dad had fixed the car, brought it out and said, get in it and drive it as fast as you can. And I did. It's part of get back on the horse, which threw you, how they used to say it out here. But that resilience. Resilience is something that young people today are lacking because they're not given opportunities to build it. When I criticize what some people call esports, parents sometimes actually threaten me. But we are raising a generation of kids for whom losing means restart. You lost some points on a screen. We can't do this. We can't continue to expect to raise balanced kids when losing means you lost some points on a screen. Losing has to hurt. It hurt to roll that car, to be out of the race, because I was in the running to win a national title. It hurt to lose a wrestling match. Physically hurt. And of course, hurt because people were there to watch it. And I had to look that kid in the face until the next season when I could beat him. To me, it's been resilience and hustle. And I think those two factors, resilience and hustle, will beat oftentimes pure intellect, pure talent. I've talked to many, many successful people and I've asked them, what is the difference maker? And they've said the same thing, resilience and hustle. And of course, what is the ultimate model of resilience? Death itself conquered. Death itself. The Lord Jesus in humility and confidence, going to the cross, knowing what he would endure on our behalf. The ultimate form of resilience. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until the Lord gives us permission to speak again together, may his peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been a Disciples View.